Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
With the third pick in the 2020 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball from Chino Hills, California.
TJ, oh my goodness! Stunning with the left hand! Devontae deep! Oh my goodness! I don't believe it! A 30-foot on the ground!
Just stop it already! All right, everyone, welcome into another BuzzBeat podcast, a Charlotte Hornets podcast. This is Richie Randall, and I'll be joined by Brian today. I totally forgot that Spencer was unable to join us. He is relaxing at the beach right now. I actually just came back from the beach a couple weekends ago. The weather was not great. It was overcast, and we kind of had to dodge in and out of the rain, run down to the beach, run back up because it was getting too cloudy. And then by the time I got back up, it was actually sunny. Like, I just hate those types of weathers, like, you know, at in Florida or on the beach where, like, at any moment a thunderstorm can come and you got to pack everything up and go.
Yeah. Especially if, were you on the like beachfront or were you close to the beach or were you like, you know, a few blocks off too?
No, we were on the beachfront, but still.
Yeah. It's still, especially if you have a kid, you know, cause I'm sure like that is just a mountain of things that must, you know, things that like occupy time, you know, for the kid on the beach. It's a little bit easier for me cause it's just like, I need like a chair and a bunch of sunscreen and like a million beers. But other than that, I'm pretty good. I haven't been to the beach in like 2 years, man. I'm jealous. Spencer's actually at Bald Head Island. And I feel confident saying that because he's actually put that location out on social media. So not parts unknown. He's at Bald Head, which like that is one of the nicest, most relaxing places in the state of North Carolina to get to. And I wish I was there right now. I love that place.
Yeah, I went to Myrtle where people there just have all this confidence in the world. They just, you know, they're just some like people that should not be showing their stomach are. They're just out and about.
Yeah.
It's great for people watching.
It really is. Yeah, one time in college, I went to Myrtle Beach with some friends for a concert. We were very broke, so we stayed at the COA, like the campgrounds area.
Okay.
And oh my God, the people watching there was we still joke about like some of the people. It was like 10 years ago, you know, that we saw this thing. And it was quite the scene. I mean, you're always gonna have an experience if you go there, if you go to Myrtle, you know. But Baldhead is not Baldhead in so many ways is not Myrtle Beach.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this? I'm sure you have. The Vulgaris story in Dallas Mavericks front office. Like how crazy. Like I did not realize that guy had that much say within his organization. Like I thought he was just like this, you know, quantitative like research guy. And
you bring him in. So in theory, you think he's like another voice. And, you know, it's like he's there to give you the sort of like the macro stats on any decision that you might make, but he's not like, you wouldn't think of him as like, you know, the story by Tim Cato and Sam Amick in The Athletic, which was very well reported and was well done. Certainly paints, Bob Vulgaris as like the number two guy in the Dallas front office. And at this point, I'm sure everyone's read it, but just a guy that has gone against other front office types has very bizarrely during the 2020 draft, just iced out all of Dallas's entire scouting department. So he could make the first two picks, which, like, you know, Josh Green and Tyrell Terry are like decent prospects, but like the setup for that almost feels like a whole other story that just, like, you know, he was there in person and everyone else digitally, like, able to, you're like, whoa, that's a whole other thing going on there. Like, damn, man. And most concerning if you're a Dallas fan, and the story said, like, look, none of this is like beyond repair. And, you know, Luka's going to sign the max extension, but just, dude, like, you know, it seems like he and Luka, that's literally how the story starts. Mm-hmm. That Bob Vulgaris and Luka Doncic, you know, an executive who made a lot of money as a sports gambler and, like, you know, one of the greatest prospects since LeBron James, are maybe not quite on the same page.
Yeah.
If that is the case, you know, if it is really like that, I mean, like, if you either have to mend it quickly or Bob Vulgaris has got to go work for another NBA team. Like, you know, it's just like, you can't, like, the only thing that can't happen in the NBA is, like, you get a franchise type cornerstone like that.
And you got to make him happy. You got to make him happy.
And, like, and it's one thing if you're like, yeah, you know, the team success just isn't there. And, you know, he feels a calling to go back to his hometown or whatever. But it's like, if he's being actively, you know, rubbed the wrong way by someone else, it's like, you need to, like, coddle these guys or whatever. But it's like, if they're saying, like, I have a problem with this person, that's a huge issue. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I wish Vulgaris had commented in the story. I would have been fascinated to know sort of like his slant on things. Like, why did you do some of this stuff specifically towards like the 2020 drafts? But we'll see. I get the feeling like they should be able to mend fences, but like Luka's not going anywhere, man. Come on. Like, this is, he's going to sign a contract for $200 million this offseason. Yeah. Like,
I'd sign that contract too, regardless of what's going on behind the scenes.
You could have you could have 13 Bob Vulgarises. I would still sign that. But yeah, that was the main thing, was that it seemed wild. It seemed like a bad situation. But the upshot, too, was like, look, they have this incredible star. Some in the organization are doing a good job being flexible around him, you know, i.e. Rick Carlisle, sort of like, backing off as being like a guy that wants to call a play on every possession and wants to let, you know, Luka cook and spread pick and roll. And, like, to Vulgaris' credit, if you want to, like, give him any, you know, a little bit of credit here, him sort of like coming to Cuban and Carlisle with this, the thought of a spread pick and roll offense around Luka Doncic, like, yes, of course. Like, that's, like, that is a good idea. And I mean, it's like, you need to be a genius to know that, you know, at least that vision is like what Dallas should be aiming for. And if in fact, like, that dude has been like dictating Rick Carlisle's lineups and rotations, that was wild.
That's weird.
I'd like to know more of the specifics about that. Let me just leave it at that. Like, I don't question the reporting at all, you know, but I would like to know exactly, like, is he going to Rick Carlisle with the spreadsheet and being like, here, do this? Like, you know, I just would like to know how much, if say, or sort of like influence he was actually having. Was it every so often? Was it every game? You know, what? I just would like to know more. That story was fascinating. I'd like to know more information about a bunch of different stuff in it, though.
Yeah. And I think for the most part, you could probably take it as fact. There's probably a little bit in between. Obviously, there's Mark Cuban has come out and denied a lot of it, which is, you know, understandable, or I guess expected, I guess you could say. But the biggest thing to me when I read that story was, surrounded with Luka, like, you have this guy in your organization, you've got to do everything you can to make him happy. And like you're mentioning, if Vulgaris is not seeing eye to eye with Luka, it's not Luka that's shown the door, it's Vulgaris that's shown the door there.
Yeah.
But to me, it still kind of surprises me how much say he has had within this organization, whether it's with rotations, whether it's with personnel decisions. Obviously, he was brought in there for a little bit of that, but definitely not, you know, who should be starting, who should be, you know, coming off the bench and all that stuff. So,
yeah.
All right, let's get into this. But before we get into this, I always like to shout out our newest members of the Buy Me a Coffee site. Brian and Sam, not our co-host Brian, but a different Brian and Sam, are our two newest members since our last podcast. And you guys will actually have access to a new video podcast this Friday that we are releasing on Isaiah Jackson. Obviously, it's a conversation, but you will also get clips of him. Again, it's exclusive to not only Brian and Sam, but to all our supporters on that site. And then if you want to go into the episode notes to look at that link, you can just click on it and learn more about the site.
Yeah.
All right. For the next 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks with the podcast here, we're going to be breaking down some draft prospects, typically around 3 prospects per episode. We want to dive deep into them, but obviously we've still got to spend time for all 3. The first one that we're going to get into, Zaire Williams out of Stanford. Freshman, 19 years old, a wing, 6'8", 185 pounds. Just to kind of give you guys some, you know, counting stats here, he averaged 10.7 points, 4.6 rebounds, and 2.2 assists. Shot 37.4% from the field, 29.1% from behind the arc, and 79.6% from the free throw line. Now, again, I am not a draft connoisseur guru like Brian is. I've watched a couple of highlight videos on Zaire. I've read up on him a little bit recently as I've had to do this for the podcast. And I've come away with some positives, obviously, and some minuses with this guy. I will not be coming out with the big board just because I'm not going to look into that many prospects. But he feels like a guy that, you know, could go anywhere as high as maybe 7 or 8, but he can also probably drop, you know, lower in the teens. We will see when the draft comes around. Offensively, he's a lengthy, lanky athlete who does a good job of creating space with his sidesteps and his step backs. I feel like because he is so long, he is able to create that space. And because he's so long, he's also to shoot over, you know, any kind of opponent that comes his way. I think that his shot is pretty consistent up and down. Obviously, the shot selection at Stanford was really the biggest issue when it comes to a shot. I don't think his mechanics by any means are an issue. He loves to dribble the ball. So you give him the ball, he's going to dribble, try to score off the bounce. He was actually 33.7% off the dribble this past year. You know, his handle will try to get him to places. He moves more east-west to me than he does north-south. When I look at his handle, I don't think it's the tightest. It looks a little bit loose. It can get a little high, get a little wide. In terms of going east-west, he does have that sidestep. One thing I think is an underrated aspect of this guy's game on the offensive side, Brian, is his ability to pass the ball. When you look at his profile overall, you see this guy that wants to go hunt for shots and get shots, but he can pass out of the pick and roll, and he can actually fit it into tight spaces. So when I was watching these videos and seeing some of these passes that he's makes, it's almost like he was passing the ball before the, you know, the roller or the cutter was even expecting it. And then right when the guy would turn around, it would be right there, you know, in a perfect place. So offensively, that's kind of how I view this guy. Defensively, he's skinny, but his length allows him to kind of be disruptive on that end. Just like he can shoot over opponents, he can also gain ground on opponents with, you know, closeouts and block shots and stuff like that. But again, he's not that strong. And I think that's a thing that's going to be a common theme with him is like, he doesn't want contact to me.
Yeah. A couple things to add on here with Zaire, just incredibly tall, long, rangy wing prospect, pretty good leaper. The lack of strength is so apparent with him. I think last week on the pod, I talked about Jaden Springer from Tennessee, another one and done, you know, guard wing that's going to end up maybe being in around the same range as Zaire Williams, much shorter, not nearly as long, but functionally very, very strong. Well, Zaire Williams is the opposite of that. Also not very flexible, like stiff. But we'll just get into a couple other things here. 6'11 wingspan. So he is very, very long. And obviously you see that some on his defense, and we'll touch on that in a second, but his release point on his jump shot is high. He's got one of the prettiest shots in the entire class. This entire draft class, really high release. You know, it looks almost impossible to block or to really bother it when he's got it going. That pull up too is pretty darn good. That's probably like the best aspect of his offensive game. But with that jumper, you know, one motion, he gets it off, He's on balance. The shooting numbers at Stanford weren't great, obviously. Just 43% on twos, 29% on threes, 43% effective shooting overall. Not great, but 80% at the line on only like 50 attempts. But we know the importance of that as an indicator and a measurement of some type of skill. I buy him becoming a better shooter in the NBA. I buy him becoming stronger because he has to. But we'll talk about sort of like how much of a limiting factor that lack of strength is for him. It should be noted too, just like Zaire came into the season as probably projected as like a top 7 or 8 pick. He had a tough season. The numbers are tricky to evaluate. Zaire is a prospect that demands film work. I've seen probably... He played 20 games this season. I've seen probably 7 or 8, maybe 10 of his games now. But it's important to remember he missed time because of an injury. He got into a bicycle accident, and there was some time missed because of personal time. He had some deaths in the family, too. It was taking place during COVID. You know, there wasn't much of an off season. But so all of that gets baked into this cake and sort of, I think, factors into why his numbers don't look so good. But it is a little discouraging to see sort of like how stiff and weak he is on both sides of the basketball. He's 19. He'll turn 20 in September. So he's basically like a full year older than Jaden Springer. That's a little bit older for a one and done. And for a guy that needs still a fair amount of development, but I'm not real worried about that. Richie, you mentioned the space creation, that step back game. That's pretty good. You know, he can really create a lot of space with that step back move. I've got this as a note. You brought it up too. But because he's so long, when he does those little hop steps or those slides in another direction off the sort of like step back crossover dribble, he really does create separation. He can create rhythm off that and get to a shot. I think there's some decent versatility in terms of his like pull-up shooting too. You know, you see him do the snake pick and rolls and get to his pull-ups, the spot up pull-ups, some of the jail dribble pull-ups. Like there is some of that. And of course, like his release is just so pretty, so effortless. It's maybe a little slow. And I've seen Poehler on Twitter talk about this a little bit, and he's far more advanced in talking about sort of like biomechanics more so than I am. Like I'm not a shot doctor, and Poehler is just a genius, but sort of like maybe because Zaire perhaps having smaller hands, that messes with his transfer up a little bit and makes it a little bit slower. So perhaps that's a little bit of an issue, but the shot is pretty. And that high release point is certainly an advantage to his. There's nothing going to the rim in the half court off of his dribble. That's due to a handle that's really not that good. And of course, that lack of strength, which will just constantly is an issue for him. Guys can get into his dribble. He's too high. He's too stiff. He can't get into gaps. They're able to knock him off his spots. He's just not as developed there with his handle as he is with his passing craft, which you sort of brought up. And there's just sort of like a lack of burst too. So he was only 26 of 49 at the rim overall, with half of those makes coming assisted, half being unassisted. He shot 54% at the rim in the half court on non-post-up attempts, according to Synergy. 10 dunks this year. He actually has like a pretty good bounce. He's got like a little vertical, like a decent vertical lift. Like his issues finishing have more to do with him getting from like A to B, B being like the rim or the restricted area, than they do with like, yo, does he have like the touch, or does he have the length or like the balance to get up there? Like he has that stuff. He's just got to improve. He's just got to develop physically and really tighten up that handle. I think his touch on floaters and runners is pretty good too. Also with that high release that just comes silky smooth off of his hands, off of his fingers. Let's talk a little bit about his movement. So Richie, when you've watched some film on him, how have you thought, like what have your impressions been just in terms of like Zaire's movement, like how he's moved around the court? Do you have any sort of like thoughts on that?
If you're talking about off ball, I really haven't watched enough to say enough about off ball. Because I watch a lot of video clips of this guy, and he loves to handle the ball and loves to create off the bounce. So
And I think it's good that he got those reps, right? Like Stanford runs a lot of continuity ball screen. And I don't think Jared Haas is generally a pretty good coach. I don't think he used Zaire perfectly well this season necessarily. And Zaire in some of those continuity sets was a sort of like an off-ball mover and cutter, but he got some pick and roll reps out of that stuff as well. And Stanford also runs like pistol 21 action, and Zaire was able to get some of those reps. But in terms of his movement, like, I think he moves well laterally on the basketball, but changing directions, not great. Curling around screens when Stanford goes to some of their motion looks. I actually think he looks pretty good there. Like, there are some possessions in some of these games where he curls an empty side pin down. And he's able to actually like get into the lane that way or catch and get to his jumper. So sometimes I thought the movement was pretty good for a player his height and his length. Thought the movement was decent. Other times I just got worried this season watching him play, like, just didn't look right physically, stiff, awkward, occasionally uncomfortable in a stance. I think we see that mostly sort of like with his defense, but it came out with his, when handling the basketball a little bit as well. So I worry a little bit about his movement, but if he can get stronger, if you trust sort of like your physio department, in terms of your player development department, then you really could have something in terms of a nice development piece and a guy that could really be like a 3-and-D wing with a pretty shot that actually has some secondary creation, right? Can run a swing pick and roll, can run secondary action, can run Chicago action, whatever.
I also wonder, like, if I don't know much about the offense of Stanford or the personnel of Stanford, but I also wonder if he was placed into this role of being the guy or being the man, and maybe he did take some shots that he shouldn't have, or he was placed in a role where he was not strictly, but prominently, used on the ball. So it's kind of hard to see maybe how he would do off ball or whatever it may be. So I'm kind of struggling to figure out, is this guy an on ball guy, an off ball guy, kind of a combination of both? That's kind of where I'm kind of, struggling to figure out where he fits offensively.
I think because of the handle right now, he is at most a secondary guy, which is okay, but that can give you some secondary pick and roll, some secondary playmaking, right? And in terms of the passing, like, he has good vision. He sees the floor. He sees cutters. I think so. He had some pretty nice flashes this season.
Yeah.
In terms of pick and roll passing, Richie, you mentioned like him being able to leverage that pull up gravity along with his height, so that he's 6'8", he can see him pass over. There are different windows he can access, right, because of his size. But he can also, like, throw a pretty nice pocket pass, too. Like, he's got some ability to do some of that stuff. I don't think he necessarily has, like, great feel in terms of passing. Because of that, it's slower, it's more deliberate. I think he forces some awkward passes. That said, I do think, like, the more concerning turnovers with him come with his handle, not with, sort of, like, not with him trying to, like, push balls into windows that sort of like obviously aren't there, even though like that is, I mean, I think that's an issue with him too, but I'm more concerned with like the self-creation turnovers. It would also help if he was a little bit better using his left hand to pass. I feel like he often has to come back to his right hand, and that opens him up for steals and deflections. But yeah, I think he can get there as a secondary creator, assuming the pull-up shot comes along and aided by his height, right? And it's good that he got those pick and roll reps. We talked about that, but he's going to have to improve his handle and improve that the sort of like the pick and roll passing decision maker. And then, yeah, like the strength is one of those things too. Like, he's going to have to get better at finishing through contact. He's going to have to be able to be better finishing around the rim. Again, I like his touch on floaters and runners, but if he absorbs any sort of contact, like that just throw, like he's almost rendered like useless. You know what I mean? And it just completely knocks him off of his line. And he throws up some pretty tough looking shots on some of those possessions. And then defensively, again, I hate to miss like the sixth time I've brought this up, but just like his lack of strength is sort of an issue for him. But because of his length, he can really bother on closeouts. Mm-hmm. I think he can be a reliable team defender as a guy that's, reading passing lanes, making the right rotations, has some like weak side rim protection that he can bring, rotate over from help side, help with the basket. He can do some of that. Like there's some event creation for him as a defender, even if the Stocks numbers were like okay this year, 2.2% block rate, 1.7% steal rate. You know, those are okay, not great. You would think someone with his length, you'd maybe like to see a little bit more. But I think for the most part, you know, his on-ball defense against multiple position types looks pretty good, you know, even laterally against smaller ball handlers. Of course, some of those smaller, twitchier guys were able to take him, you know, drive him off the dribble this season. Pick and roll defense, this is the strength issue. You know, he just gets stuck on screens and then just dies. And he's just not able to get back into the play. Like, he's going to have to get way better there. He has too much defensive upside to be that poor guarding the ball in pick and roll at times. But again, just improve the strength. There are other possessions too. He looks very good on the basketball. Like I said, he can move well laterally. There are sometimes he is able to get over screens and look to bother a shot or a pass. And I like the highlights for him defensively are pretty impressive. I think he's going to have to just get more flexible, you know, be less stiff and get stronger so that he's able to sort of like fight through some of these screens a little bit more.
I think what it comes down to, I mean, I don't know if it's a skill, but the swing aspect of him is strength. I think a lot of his deficiencies keep coming back to strength. Like you mentioned, getting hung up on screens, being contact adverse at the rim, not being able to move north, south with the ball in his hands because he gets knocked off his path. You know, he is disruptive on the defensive side when it comes to off-ball stuff, like jumping passing lanes and deflections and steals, but that only goes so much. You got to be disruptive on the ball as well with your strength, and his length will take him a long way. It will, it really will, but I think the strength aspect of this, it really comes back to that, and I think if you can get that kind of corrected in his first couple of years, I think a lot of these things will start to take off. The one thing that I'm just, he, out of the three players that we're talking about today, and maybe I'm wrong, there is more variance to me in the way that I see his floor and ceiling than I do these other two guys that we're about to talk about. Maybe that's just my personal opinion, but like I can see this guy becoming, you know, a top eight player from this draft, but I can also see this guy not really developing into the way that he's supposed to. That's just my opinion. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, there was one time in the BuzzBeat Slack a couple months ago, I mentioned this. Like, there are a lot of wings that I like in this range. And, like, if you want to take, like, taking Zaire is a guy that I really had circled as, like, a prospect for the Hornets if they made the playoffs, like, a little bit later. But I still think you can justify him with a late lottery or even a top 10 pick. Like, he is that much ability because of that shot, because of the defense, because of the length. And some of his deficiencies are correctable, mostly like the strength and just like a flexibility standpoint. Like, he's got to get better there. You can do that. It's just going to take time and work and a process. So, but because he has those issues too, it's like, yes, that he's limited in ways for now that are a little bit of a concern, but I still really like Zaire overall as a prospect. I don't think he's who Charlotte will go with at 11, but I wouldn't be crying if they did it. I think he's a pretty strong prospect.
Strong as in physically strong?
Yeah, not physically strong. I just think there's some, like, I think with Zaire, sometimes we tend to overthink it a little bit. Like, his length, his shooting profile, his flashes as a passer, the defensive upside, it's like, put it together, he sort of is like the proto wing in a lot of ways, assuming some of these other things come along, right? Specifically, like the improvement in strength, just like the improvement physically overall, and obviously like the handle getting a little bit better too.
Yeah, one common theme between three of these players that we're talking about today is just the lack of physicality, the lack of strength in some sort of way with these guys. So let's go ahead and get on with Kai Jones.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, Kai Jones next up on the docket here for us. The oldest of the prospects that we're going to discuss today, sophomore at Texas, who really had a breakout season for Shaka Smart in Texas this year. Super versatile player, one of the premier, I think, like, what if players in this class, because his flashes are just they're so, so good. 6'11", long, tall, but he's just an incredible mover, right? Like he moves like a wing. Like he's so smooth. He laterally, he's quick, hips, ankles, like all of that stuff is really, really good. Like it's freaky just how well, like what he's able to do in space, like in the open court. He moves like a wing at like a 6'11 wing in a lot of ways. He already turned 20. I believe he'll be 21 in January. So just to have that on the radar, I guess technically if you see him, he's going to be listed as like a 4 or a 5 defensively. And we can get more into this in a little bit, but you know, I have real questions for him defensively as a center, really where he is as like a rotation center and a guy that's just routinely out of position. But in terms of like what is good for Kai Jones, I think it's really nice to start with the offense. I feel good about his shot translating, like good shooting numbers, good indicators. The ball comes out of his hands cleanly, good wrist snap, there's a bit of a load up with the basketball, but you know, catch, reset, launch, like for the most part, I think it looks pretty good. He shot 38% on threes this year, 13 of 34. That maybe doesn't seem, you know, too crazy, but was just 7 of 24 his freshman year. So you can see he made, in terms of volume and in terms of percentage, you know, he jumped for his career 20 of 58 on threes, just a little under 35%, and about 68% career free throw shooter, but that jumped up this season to about 69%. But he has a guy that can really finish around the rim because of his length, but some of his like shooting ability too, like it's not just pure catch and shoot. Like he has some pull up. 30% of his threes that he made this season were unassisted. So he has some shot creation, and that versatility is interesting. The pull up twos where he attacks a closeout, you know, shot fake, 1 to 2 dribbles into his pull up too. But he's even got a little step back mid range game, pick and pop threes, grab and goes that he, you know, he catches a rebound and he just starts flying up the court with the basketball. And it's just, you know, it's just, here comes Kai Jones, just, you know, these just limbs just flying at you in full speed with the basketball, but just his skill, his offensive skill is really, really compelling for a guy that's that size, that moves that well and can shoot too. Has some post-up game, you know, some face-up isolation game. That's sort of intriguing, but also because of a lack of strength and sort of like clear-cut, determined moves. I think that stuff limits him a little bit. He gets knocked off his spots. You know, he can't fully rotate or spin through contact. I think that's something that you see a lot with him on film. And so because of that, he settles for bad passes or he settles for tough fadeaways. But he shot a great number this year from the field in general. He got to the line a lot, 52% free throw attempt rate. So like he's got the ability to just like make plays, make an impact for himself offensively. And then two things I want to touch on before I turn it over to you and see how you feel about Kai. Small thing that I'll start with first. I think he's an underrated cutter.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah.
I think he is like very sneakily one of the better cutters, front court cutters in this draft. I actually think Raekwon Gray from Florida State is as well, but Raekwon Gray cannot finish above the rim like Kai Jones, who had 46 dunks this season as well. It's not too shabby, but just like those cut baskets that Kai Jones gets, they're not just a byproduct of him, like, you know, chilling in the dunker spot, right? And just catching a pass. Like, sometimes it's him starting the possession out from 23 feet away on the weak side.
He
sees some sort of like some creation going along, and he'll just slide in behind or in front of his defender and get into the lane. And then at that point, he's really tough to stop because he's got a full head of steam. He's long. He can jump, like, and he's a fluid athlete. But we've talked about this a lot this season with PJ Washington and with Miles Bridges, that one of the reasons why those guys are so intriguing as offensive pieces is because of their ability to sort of do so many different things out of pick and roll or pick and pop, right? Like they can really threaten and be impact offensive players as screeners, which is like perfect around LaMelo Ball. Right now, Miles can run his own pick and roll too, and he can get into DH. Miles can basically do everything. But Bridges' ability to screen, take a switch into the post, to roll and catch a lob, to pick and pop or attack a closeout, like to do all of that stuff. And PJ can do it too. And I think Kai can also give you some of that. I think he projects out as a guy that can really be a big time offensive threat. If you put him with a guard that can create advantage off the ball screen. So he can roll and dive as a vertical lob threat because of the form and shot versatility. You know, I think he can be a real piece on offense as a screener. Let him make reads, you know, pop for jumpers, roll for rim touches, sort of depending on how teams are guarding that. I think some of the, like the improvisational reads that he and LaMelo could team up on if he was in Charlotte could be pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I don't think Texas necessarily like utilized him in that sense, but I think it's there. I think too often you saw him sort of like often stashed in the corner or, you know, on the wing or dunker spot or whatever. And like, I think there's ability for him to be like a real offensive threat as a guy that can screen and sort of just move to anywhere on the court after that. And I think that's enticing, especially if it was paired with, you know, guys like Bridges and Washington that can do that as well. So that's where I'm at with him offensively before we get into defense and where some of my concerns are. What are your sort of general thoughts about Kai, at least starting with his offense?
Yeah, the one word that I'll use to describe him on both ends, but especially on offense, is just active. He's a very active player, and I was going to bring up the fact that he just doesn't stand around. He wants to cut. He wants to get into the paint, even though he lacks some physicality on the defensive side of the court. Like, he's okay with making that weak side cut, like you mentioned, and really going up with the trees and stuff like that. I think he would provide a rim runner, lob threat. Maybe to your point, Texas didn't use him in that way. I can't really speak to that, but like his athleticism, his profile, 6'11", this guy is going to be able to be that vertical spacer that I think you can use him in that way. He also will run the floor in transition. I think that's perfect for Charlotte. He does not mind running up and down the court with the ball, without the ball, and that's only going to work well within the Borrego system. I'm assuming they're going to use him or use that offense in the same way that we did last year. Offensively, to your point, I think his shot mechanics are fairly consistent. The one thing that I did note with his shot was that his lower body was more inconsistent than his upper body. He has the tendency to kind of kick or kind of flail out his legs from time to time. Some players do that. I know that Allen Iverson did that all the time, not comparing this guy to Allen Iverson by any means, but like, you can sometimes get away with that if your upper body is consistent. He does have a flat shot at times, Brian. It doesn't have the biggest of arcs, and I do worry about that a little bit. He did shoot the ball, like you mentioned, 38% from behind the arc. So offensively, like the word that I'll use is just active. He's an athlete. He's a lob threat. He's mobile. Like those are the words that I would use to describe Kai Jones. Now, if you want to transition to the defensive side, I think you can use those words as well, but he lacks a lot of physicality on the defensive side of the court, especially in the post. And I think that's going to be kind of a conundrum here in terms of what position does he play. I think ideally you would want him to play the five, ideally. Like that's kind of where he should be headed. But physically, I don't think he's there yet. He will gamble a lot on the defensive side. I think I read somewhere that he only has like 5 years of experience playing basketball. So he's kind of still understanding the positioning, team defense. He often wants to be the guy that makes the steal and goes up in transition, but you can't do that all the time. So I'll pass it to you for defensive, you know, concerns, because I think that's where most of the concerns lie with this guy.
Yeah, and just two quick numbers for him. Offensively, shot 66% at the rim in the half court, and also 56% effective shooting on catch and shoots in the half court as well. 32 attempts, but 70th percentile nationally in terms of efficiency. His synergy page is pretty interesting. 1 point per possession on spot ups, 2 points per possession on cuts, and yeah, pretty good, you know, putback finisher as well. 10% offensive rebound rate. Not a great defensive rebounder. Anyways, we'll slip right into his defense, because again, I like Kai Jones a lot as a prospect. The flashes are so interesting with his frame and his talent and his offensive skill. But some of the issues he has defensively right now, it's sort of like tough to just label him as like a center, right? Like he feels more like at times, I don't know, he feels, you know, more sort of like a stretch four and a half, you know, than he does like just a you know, a pure sort of like rim protector and you know, middle screen setter for you on offense. He's lost a lot on the defensive end.
Yep.
He moves very well. He's athletic, which helps, but he really struggles from a rotational standpoint, constantly out of position. Again, the movement skills are good. That affords him some level of both individual defense and scheme versatility because he can do a lot of different stuff. But just that back line rim protection is concerning. Again, out of position all the time. Slow to react in a way that, you know, say someone like Evan Mobley, just boom, like instant reaction. Like, oh, I got to get over to this spot and block this shot. Isaiah Jackson, I got to get to the spot and block the shot. I got to get here and contest real quickly. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're seeing that the same level of like processing in terms of that, you know, has some nice possessions when he floats around the paint, you know, able to pick up multiple guys in scramble situations or after a switch, which is kind of nice because again, he moves well laterally and he's long. So just like in theory, he can guard a lot of positions. That sort of gets to the sort of like versatility, at least in theory with Kai Jones. He's just not present on every help opportunity. Like getting, you know, I think, you know, if his man is setting like a pin down screen for an off ball guard or whatever, like Kai's ability to sort of like be in that middle ground area, you know, as that guy's coming off, maybe looking to curl or get to a jumper, like he's just not present on those types of possessions. I do think some of this might get to sort of his experience, Richie, which you said, like he's not been playing basketball for that long. So I don't think this stuff comes naturally. That's a little bit of a concern because it's like, well, how much can you teach? How much can you improve? Like, what type of skill is this? Is this something you can inquire? You know, playing more basketball will definitely help, but will it ever get good enough that you can really trust this guy as someone that can, you know, be at least a partial anchor of a defense? Like, that's a real concern. And so I think that limits his potential as like a space playmaking five to an extent. Guys can just sort of also score over the top of him, which is sort of like gets back to the physicality issue you brought up. And then if you're playing him at the four, you know, if he's a guy that's also running around, you know, chasing guys around the screen, around the perimeter, like he can be good into some of those situations, but I feel like I've noticed him as a chase defender struggling, you know, step behind, gets caught on the screen, doesn't close down hard enough, like on a pin down switch or whatever. So I have some real red flags with him as a defender, but should also note with that length, with that athleticism, he did finish his career at Texas, which was over 50 games with 5.5% block rate, 2% steal rate. So some decent stocks numbers there. Although that block rate number isn't like, you know, anything, you know, too crazy for a guy that's, you know, 6'11" and can move and jump the way he can. So I have real concerns with him defensively.
Yeah, it ain't Isaiah Jackson-esque, right?
No, it's not. Almost 13% this season for Ijax. Yeah.
That's the thing that I keep coming back to with Kai Jones. As I'm talking myself through this, I think going into the process of looking into these guys, I think I actually favored Zaire over Kai. But there's a part of me that wants to favor Kai over Zaire, just kind of talking about him. But I do wonder how much coaching can really get him up to speed, especially for a team like the Hornets. In the position that they are, I assume if they draft a center or a 4.5, as you want to call him, which is probably more appropriate, do they, you know, go after a center in free agency? I would hope that they still would. Or you could just draft two centers in the second round like we did last year. But but I guess
I wouldn't do that. Yeah.
My point is, like, how much, you kind of mentioned this, how much of this can be corrected quickly by coaching, or is it going to be more of a project for this guy? Because I see the intrigue on both sides of the ball. He's a very fluid, active player. And on the defensive side, he can guard out in space. Like he can guard 1 through 5 out in space, like side to side. He's active. But once when it gets down low, there's no physicality. Once when he's off ball, he gets lost at times and he gambles. that's the big worrisome aspect of Kai Jones. Can it be coached? And if it can, then it becomes one of those things where all of this stuff that we're talking about, for the most part, gets corrected.
Yeah, I think it's just going to take time. So the issues that Charlotte had defensively around the basket this season, like, yeah, you know, you can't expect, I don't think, unless they got up to number two in the draft and they drafted Evan Mobley, you know, there's no cure-all. I think someone like Isaiah Jackson out of Kentucky could help you in a variety of ways. I don't think drafting Garuba is necessarily, you know, I don't think he's a five, but you would play him some at five, and he's a good defender and has the chance to be one of the better defenders in this draft class. So he would help you some defensively. Like, I don't see Kai Jones really coming in and making that much of a positive impact for you defensively, though I would love to see what he would look like offensively with LaMelo Ball. But I don't know if he is the guy for you in that regard. With that, Richie, anything else to add on Kai Jones, or should we move on to our third and final guy today?
Let's go ahead and move on to Moses Moody.
All right. This is a very popular prospect and a guy that I really like in this draft class. Moses Moody, one and done wing out of Arkansas. You may remember him from the stacked 2019-2020 Montverde Academy team that also featured Cade Cunningham, who's projected to go number one in this draft, Scotty Barnes, who's projected to be a top 10 pick, Moses Moody, projected to be a top 10 pick. That team also had Dayron Sharp, who's projected as a first-round pick after one season. At UNC, that team also had Caleb Houston, who is set to be a lottery pick in 2022 and will be playing for Juwan Howard in Michigan next season. That is probably the greatest high school basketball team, if not of all time, probably at least since Muggsy Bogues was playing at Dunbar High School about 40 years ago. So Moody's been on the scene for a while now. Just turned 19 about 2 weeks ago. 6'6", 210, pretty well built. I actually think he kind of already has like an NBA-type yeah. body, just in terms of pretty thick in the chest, you know? I like that. And I think he'll get stronger too, which is interesting. Sort of like chisel up that frame a little bit. Definitely has like a plus wingspan. And this is probably part of the intrigue with him. Some places have Moses Moody listed at 6'6", but with a 7-foot wingspan. ESPN said a 7'1" wingspan during a broadcast this season. So that's interesting, right? That if he has that type of length, that's like pretty appealing. Some of the other athletic traits are like a little less appealing. Like, he's not very quick. He's not that fast. Only 10 dunks this season. So not a big time leaper, not super quick off the court. But good motor, good footwork. So like, you know, it's not a complete negative defensive or athletically, but there are very much some concerns. If you're looking about him, let's start with his defense. Why don't we do that? I think this is where some of his sort of like limitations as an athlete can be an issue for him. 2% block rate, 1.6% steal rate. So like not necessarily great from a stocks perspective, but sort of in that same area we talked about with right there with Zaire Williams, actually almost identical. On ball, point of attack defense, you know, there are some issues here. Of course, his length helps, but didn't necessarily take the top opposing wing guarding out of Arkansas scheme. You know, I think he projects as like an okay defensive wing, and that the length will certainly help. The motor will help. But I think there are some issues in terms of his like on ball guarding skills. Like, is he athletic? Is he quick enough to do that, to be that presence laterally guarding against the basketball? Team defense, solid decision maker, you know, good position, quick rotations, willing helper. You can read coverages, you know, guilty of ball watching. He'll miss some stuff for sure. And Zaire Williams also, you know, guilty of ball watching as a team defender as well. Good hands, fast and strong, willing to help, digging down as a help defender. So while I am concerned with him as athletically, I like enough of his defensive profile in terms of his length, in terms of his hands and his motor, his ability to sort of like be smooth in terms of reading coverages, ball watching less, that I think he can be like, okay for you on that end, right? Be like a pretty solid, a guy that you can envision being on the floor in a postseason game, right? You know, that type of guy that's not going to take anything away from your defense. He's not going to be a stopper. And maybe Charlotte's looking for someone that can really be a dog for them on the basketball. I know that's not Moody, but I do think he should be a mostly fine defender.
Interesting. I when I was taking notes on Moody, again, not as much film to watch as you have, but when I took notes defensively, I thought he was, you know, solid. I thought he was a disruption on ball. I think he smartly swipes, you know, at balls when he can and just, you know, rips it from opposing players. I think his wingspan is huge, whether it's contesting shots or just being a pest on the defensive side of the court. Maybe I have a higher grade defensively, but by the same token, I guess I haven't watched as much off ball with him and stuff like that. So full games have just not been something that I've watched with Moody. But yeah, defensively, that's really all I got. Like, just, you know, I think he's solid. Yeah. Maybe I have a higher grade on him. He's disruptive on ball. I guess off ball is really where I've got to watch a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I think wingspan really helps him defensively. Offensively, I think his shooting form is very well balanced. He's very good at corner threes, 19 of 30, 63% from there. He has a smooth up and down release. I wouldn't really call him a movement shooter per se, but he's more of like an off ball, off screen shooter. Like he gets set, I guess is what I'm saying. He's not like a JJ Redick curling off of screens and just catching it all in one motion. I also think he does a pretty good job as a creator in the mid-range, meaning, you know, he doesn't have the tightest of handles or like the best moves, but he can draw some defenders in, and he's an underrated passer, kind of like Zaire Williams, where he can use his off the dribble stuff to draw in defenders and make that pass as well. So one last thing offensively, I think this is something that's also a Zaire Williams thing, does not finish well at the rim. He sometimes doesn't have a plan, Brian, and just kind of jumps off from weird angles or too far out and just leaps to try to make something happen at the rim. And a lot of times it just ends up, you know, with him kind of throwing up, you know, a shot that just is, you know, ill-advised. So that's the one thing that I did have offensively where I'm just a little bit concerned.
Yeah. And to be clear, Moody's a guy that, like, you know, he's not going to be I don't think he'll be there at 11. There's been a fair amount of variance in terms of like where he's moved around in terms of mocks. You know, he had a tough showing during the NCAA tournament, even as like Arkansas won a couple of games. But some of the Draft Express ESPN guys really like knocked his stock after that. I think too much. This is a guy that still could go, you know, could be a top 6-7 pick in the draft or whatever. But when I think of Moody, and you brought up a good, I want to circle back because you brought up a good point too. Like the low stocks numbers don't tell the whole story about what he can do defensively. Although I am worried about his athleticism on that end of the court, but I do think he's like I do think he's a pretty solid defender. For his offense, like he's going to need to shoot. He's going to need that jumper, that 3-point shot to land at a good clip. If he makes threes, it sets everything else up, right? And he's got good range, good volume this season, 36% on threes, 162 attempts. Most of that coming off the catch. He's a better shooter off the catch, but 90% of his threes this year were assisted, which is fine, but also maybe speaks to some of his limitations as an individual shot creator. 62% effective shooting on spot up, no dribble jumpers. So again, another good stat to focus on. Some other strong indicators, 81% from the free throw line, 40% on long twos. And if you're going back to his senior season at Montverde, 47% shooting threes that year, 82% from the line. So like, there's a lot of reasons to sort of like buy him as like a spot up threat. I think the form is pretty solid with his shot, consistent motion, certainly better off the catch, high release, smooth. If there's one knock, you know, maybe a little bit of a dip during his sort of like load and gather phase, it's not a huge deal. It's, you know, it's clearly something he uses to sort of like create a little bit of rhythm. But you know, maybe that'll be a bit of an issue against NBA type length and athleticism and closeouts, movement shooter, some good, some bad, you know, shot ready coming off pin downs, nothing super advanced. It would have been interesting if he could have played with like, you know, Mason Jones or Isaiah Joe, who, you know, Joe considered coming back to Arkansas for his junior season and probably would have helped Moody in a couple of different facets, both on and off the basketball. You know, I think he'll have to become, you know, improve his screen usage. That's probably something you're going to want to see him in the NBA. In the context of the Hornets, you know, could you see him as a, you know, DHO shooter partner with PJ or Miles? I think that's a little interesting. But what happens if Moses Moody isn't like a, not like an elite shooter, but like, what if he's just an average shooter? You know, what happens to his sort of like overall ceiling as a player? And that's maybe a little bit of a concern. Now, can he offer you anything in terms of secondary creation? I think he can.
Yeah.
I think there are some good passing flashes, you know, when he's able to get into gaps against a scrambled defense. Moody can pick guys out, live dribble drop passes to cutters. He can even throw guys open at times. His handle is pretty good, but does he have enough sort of like explosive pop to like really separate from defenders, right? To get space in terms of like one-on-one shot creation. You know, we'll see how much of like a true like advantage creator, advantage builder that Moses Moody can be. But again, right now, you know, he needs that, the 3-point jump shot to really be like sort of like the jumping off point for the rest of his offense. But I think like his ancillary skills off the basketball are pretty good. Like he'll crash the offensive glass. He can be a good cutter, do these sort of like generic things that just keep an offense humming, you know? But I think his processing speed as a passer is pretty good. And again, I think he can throw guys open at times. I think he can fit in some tough passes and just give you some secondary creation, sort of interesting. So yeah, I like Moody. I think there are reasons to buy his jump shot. And because of that, that should open up all of these secondary sort of like benefits that he can offer a team.
Right. I think of the three players that we talked about today, he's the guy that has the highest floor, I would say. I mean, obviously he's one of those guys that is boring, I guess, if you want to call it. He's not like a sexy pick like Kai Jones or Zaire Williams. I think you know what you're getting with this guy. He's going to come in and have that IQ feel for the game. His length is going to come in and be a big factor for him. And to your point, he can be a secondary creator. I think if you draft this guy to be a primary creator, I think you're doing it wrong. I don't think you can expect that out of him at this point, you know, as a rookie. But that, I mean, I don't know if it's a swing skill by any means, but to your point, like if his 3-point shot starts to falter a little bit, and if that doesn't really come online, or it wavers, it comes and goes, kind of almost like a Malik Monk, like where his 3-point shot never really translated outside of this past year, what else is he going to offer? Because to me, I would draft him if he's there at 11. And to your point,
oh yeah, I would too.
Right,
yeah.
He's probably going to be gone by 6, 7, 8. You know, whatever. Yeah. But it just screams like a boring pick. And again, that's not a bad thing by any means. But what is the upside for this guy?
You better be careful, Richie. The Moody Mafia that exists in draft Twitter that I consider myself to be a part of, although not nearly one of its like most ardent supporters. But I'm a believer, but yeah, maybe I'm a little bit, I don't know where the consensus is necessarily on Moody. You know, I think I'm generally higher than him, maybe compared to, I don't know about most, but right. there are some percentage of people that are really following the draft that are a little more that see him as a, you know, top five guy in this draft. Certainly with the drop from 4 to 5 beyond the, you know, the Jalen Suggs, the Jalen Green range into, you know, Moody or Jonathan Kuminga at 5 and 6 or whatever. But I like Moody a good about. I think you can, I think the shot is bankable enough. Mm-hmm. And then with that wingspan and some of the secondary sort of like tertiary skills that he can give you. Yeah. And he's young too. I mean, he just turned 19 May 31st. So like, you know, you've got a guy that could be a good development piece for you. And hopefully the thought would be too, like, can you get him a little more explosive athletically? Like can, while also, you know, strengthening him up a little bit as well too. But again, that's going to come down to, you know, physio and player development and that type of stuff.
I will join the Moses Moody Mafia just to avoid any kind of backlash of what I just said. I didn't mean the boring to come off as harsh, but
you gotta be careful, man. There are gonna be people with pitchforks and you know, fire on a stick outside of the Randall house, the Moody Mafia. Yeah. Yes.
Any last thoughts or we want to wrap here?
No, let's go ahead and wrap up. I mean, I think these are three good prospects. I think they're three guys that Charlotte should kick the can on at 11. I mean, if Moody's there, I think it's sort of like a maybe a no-brainer of sorts, but I don't envision him being there at 11, assuming that's where Charlotte stays. Right. I mean, they could move up, but you know, none of these guys are going to salt. Like, Charlotte has issues on the roster in terms of, you know, rim protection, perimeter defense. I don't think there are any sort of like guarantees that these guys are going to help, but they offer you the opportunity to sort of like potentially, with some development, improve those aspects of Charlotte's roster. So it's exciting. It's another way to add that this is a good tool to add another piece to the young core here. And yeah, to varying degrees of excitement, I would say all three of these guys could potentially be factors for the Hornets here.
Yeah, and to your point, the lottery is, I think, less than a week away now, so we'll figure out if they're drafting at 11 or they jump into the top four. I don't want to get hopes up like we did last year. You know, I don't think that's going to repeat itself. So let's just try to focus on these guys that are going to be in the 7 to 15 range. I think that's probably where we're going to focus our efforts, but maybe things will change by next time we record. We will see, but thanks again, guys, for tuning in to another Buzz Beat. For Brian, I'm Richie. We will see you guys next time.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.